When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Every Rocky Ever, a Rockies podcast here with Rocky Mountain Rooftop, the Rockies affiliate of Fans First Sports Network. I'm your host, Skylar Timmons. Joined here once again, we're both wearing new hats in this video version of the show. I'm wearing a Fresno Grizzlies one, and I'm joined by my brother, Dustin, who's wearing a Rockies hat.
Gotta look at those clearance racks.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 2016 All-Star hats with the cartoony Rockies.
Yeah, but we love good hats in this family. Always on the lookout for hats.
Easy, George.
Plenty of hats. Give me that hat! Oh, George Frazier. But fun times. Rocky season is now underway. Regular season 2024. It's pretty miserable for the most part. So, that's why we're here to look to the past and celebrate players from the past. And I believe this is episode number 25, Dustin. I believe we've been doing this for a year. Ooh. And this is episode number 25 on the show. Fun stuff.
Yeah. Who would have ever thought?
Yeah. And I haven't kept track of how many guys we've actually talked about. So there we go. You're
to those episodes where we kind of throw out guys. There we're taking chunks out.
Or your inaugural 1993 roster guys.
Yeah, there's 25.
But figure we'll try to keep this one a little shorter here on this episode, maybe a little normal length. And we figured we'll go with a more notable name. Around the same time, figuring with some, you know, opening day heroics in lieu of Ryan McMahon's grand slam in the home opener. And we figure that we'll go with an infielder that I always enjoyed. I think a lot of people always liked this infielder and also was a victim of a very unfortunate, albeit hilarious, injury that kind of derailed his career. But we're going to talk about old Clint Barmus, the old middle infielder for the Rockies, Clint Barmus. And before we throw it into his career, what do you remember about Clint Barmus when you hear his name? What do you think of?
Well, really just his last name of, is it Barmes? Is it Barmus?
Barmé.
That was always one. Barmé. But Clint Barmus, when I think of Clint Barmus, I think of just, in my baseball life, is a dirt bag. Sense. Baseball dirt bags are awesome. Dirt bags outside of baseball are terrible. But he's just a guy that just hard-nosed, played the game hard, played it right, and was a prospect he kind of heard of, and then he came up and had a huge impact in that very first, you know, in that season where in the 05 season, he's a starter as a rookie and that opening day. But I just think of, sadly, like a lot of these Rockies that we talk about, the what if he hadn't got hurt, would he have still played, would he have made a bigger role? How would that affected? Would he have been our second baseman with Tulo at short? Who knows what could have happened, you know?
Yeah, and he's one of those guys that was just circumstances, just didn't pan out. It turned out good for the long run for the Rockies in general, but for him, kind of took on that extra utility infielder guy throughout the rest of his career. But let's get right into his career. And Dustin, tell me about Clint Barmas and his career.
Clint Barmas, shortstop, second baseman, right-handed thrower, right-handed batter from Indiana. And he was drafted by the Rockies in the 10th round of the 2000 draft out of Indiana State University. And he ended up making his major league debut September 5th, 2003. And wore number 12, except for the 1 year he wore 20 in 2007 when Steve Finley showed up. He had to switch over to number 21, but played for the Rockies for 8 seasons, and then made stops in Houston, Pittsburgh, and had just a little like hello and goodbye. Went to the Padres, and then at the end of his career, you know, dabbled with some Royals business, but was out of baseball by 2016. But after the Rockies, he got traded to the Houston Astros for Felipe Polino. Mm-hmm. Names floated around, I think, in the last episode. But then he went over to Pittsburgh to reunite with Clint Hurdle. And the one that caught me off guard was remembering that he played for the Padres.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck? I don't. And then I, oh yeah, I remember that. That was his career. Ended up playing 13 years of Major League Baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like a lot of guys that we talk about, nice little career that he carved out for himself. Probably wasn't what he had hoped, but he still got to stick around for quite a while, you know, playing Major League Baseball in his career. And kind of looking through his things, you can see a lot of those years where, okay, this is the year he's going to be the regular. Oh, he's not playing well, or oh, he's got injured, and somebody else gets to step into that role ahead of him. And it's a couple of those instances that we'll talk about here for old Barmy, as I'd like to call him, or the baldest head that has ever been on the Rockies. Almost looked like the, I want to say like the bald albino. Just almost looked like just no hair on that face whatsoever.
Yeah. And he always had it, you know, and it, he had it, the hat down, and, but he just was a solid, solid player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking at his career, 8 years with the Rockies. Hit .254, .300 on base, .404 slugging for a 75 OPS plus. So, no, a lot of below average things here, but you know, 665 games, had 582 hits, 292 runs scored, 131 doubles, 15 triples, 61 homers, 285 RBIs, 39 stolen bases. And then had 397 strikeouts to 125 walks. So you look at those numbers, you're like, pretty solid, like bench utility infielder. Like you'd take that production on your team year to year if he's playing 90 to 100 games every year.
Yeah. And what looking at like researching him back in his youth, as I was researching, it was pretty cool. As he was a little kid, he actually played in a Bambino World Series here in Pueblo when he was 12. So that was kind of cool. But reading about him as high school, in college, is in his junior college, the dude could hit.
Mm-hmm.
Batting over 400. He had, in all of these things, I saw how many, I guess his coach at Olney Central College in Illinois, he had, his coach said he had a, say a 35 game hit streak.
Huh.
He went hitless one game and then hit in another 17 straight.
Uh-huh.
And just like when he goes to Indiana State, a 30 game hit streak and Farmer says that that's what got him drafted. But looking at that, he was like, that's all he did was hit. And
yeah.
In his minor league stuff with the Rockies, he had a lot of plate discipline. Very little strikeouts. Put the bat on the ball. And got him up to the majors within the 3 years. Mm-hmm. So pretty solid.
Yeah, and looking at it, I think in 2005, I think it's the big thing for him where, if things had turned out differently, probably could have won the Rookie of the Year that year. Because in 2005, played 81 games before he broke his collarbone, which we'll touch on in a second. Broke his collarbone, played 81 games, was hitting 289, 330 on base, 434 slugging. Had 10 home runs, 46 RBIs. Ended up finishing eighth that year. But come out, stormed onto the scene, was doing a lot of good. They're in a... For the Rockies, but it just didn't pan out because, he's a country guy. He likes to hunt and stuff, and I guess his teammate old Todd Helton gifted him a deer, and I guess he tripped, bringing it into his house, and broke his collarbone, which required surgery and pretty much just derailed the rest of that season for him because he got surgery in early June, but he had been the Rookie of the Month in April. He hit .410 with 4 home runs and 14 RBIs in that month. Became the third player in MLB history to hit .400 or better in March/April, joining the New York Yankees' Willie Randolph and Andre Scalarraga in 1986. And then he had the injury that sidelined him till September. But, roughly around that time before it, he was pretty much leading all rookies in most offensive categories, was just being a stud. And fortunately, like he said, he says, it's the craziest thing that's happened to me by far. And the freaking accident ended up ending his season. And really, I think changed the trajectory of his career the rest of the way, because then Tulo's ready. He takes over shortstop, and then there's battles for second base, and then other guys come up. So this is really unfortunate where he had this promising start, and then that dang deer.
Well, then, throughout his career, he also had, he'd get hit by a fair share of pitches.
Mm-hmm.
Taking heaters off the hands isn't very healthy, and so time with broken hand kind of stuff from being hit by pitch. And for me, I remember that rookie season and thinking this guy can hit .289 average, but then there really wasn't 2008 part-time role at .290. And then in '09, when he had 23 homers, .245 average. And just, I do remember those ups and downs with Barmas.
Mm-hmm.
Dang, this guy's on fire. And then, holy cow, he can't hit the red side of a barn.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at those stats, I just didn't realize those. In my mind, he was a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just because of those couple of seasons that stuck in my head rather than the whole thing.
And I think part of that could come from the fact, we were talking about, he seemed more he was the bench guy, the utility infielder that would fill in. He ended up playing a lot more some of those seasons than you'd think. But it's compared to, Tulo's in there. There's kind of a revolving door at second base. Everybody before DJ LeMahieu is kind of a blur to me at second base in those years. But that's what it was like is... In those short stints, I think, when we got exposed to him in those short instances, we're like, oh, man, this dude's legit. And then we'd get into the valleys We're like, oh man, this just isn't working out. Like, we like Barmas, but this isn't working. In 2010, he got benched in favor of Eric Young Jr. at second base.
Yikes.
So is that thing of, man, we knew it, and this is an evergreen story for the Rockies. We know what a guy could do and the potential he has, but it just never quite materializes the way we want it to.
Yeah. Oh man, just it. But you think of Clint Barmas, and he was part of that, you know, that homegrown group of dudes that revived the Rockies in that 07 season. Matt Holliday, Jared Atkins, Aaron Cook, Brad Hopp, Corey Sullivan, you know, throwing Spielbergs, and those guys, Jeff Francis, in there, that those guys up together, you know, and it was well documented how much of a tight-knit group those guys were. Looking at the rookie of the year voting, where he was an eighth, you know, Jared Atkins was part of that list, Jeff Francis was part of that list. You know, there are some all-time Rockies in that rookie of the year race. His rookie season.
Yeah. And it's just the crazy thing with baseball is if he doesn't get injured, who knows what could have happened. Maybe he finds consistency and, you know, doesn't have to deal with all those other injuries and, you know, he sticks around for a long while. Who knows? But, man, good old Barmas. And, no, a decent glove. I think that's what I always remember. Especially when he moved on, and I remember him being with the Pirates. I was like, he's doing good over there, and I just remember him having a good glove, which I think is definitely a glove-first type of guy as his big league career went on. But that's what I always remember him even more so is, okay, Barmas, maybe he can get some good knocks here, but his glove is reliable. And I don't know if that's just me revising history, or I haven't looked at specific data analytics for it, but he always passed the eyeball test for me.
Yeah, because looking at the most time in those times when he was like in the small sample sizes, his rookie season, he only had, you know, he had 17 errors, and then in 2006 he had 18 errors playing shortstop. A 958 and 969 fielding percentage, but you know, other than that, you know, it's pretty solid. He even got some outfield time, played center field, outfield, game at first. I mean third, but overall in his career, a 974 fielding percentage. You know, I'm an old school stats guy, so there's probably other. You look at those, the sabermetrics, and no idea.
His defensive run saved and his range. And I think that goes back to, like you said, the way Clint Barmas, one of those old school type of players, just a grinder that just played that game hard every day. And tell us that certain group of just. Oh, these country rednecks type of guys, the country hardball type of guys in that vein of Todd Helton, you know, and Brad Hopp. Those guys were all good buddies. And you can see that reflected in the way he played the game. Played it hard, and well, it didn't work out for him in every instance, but he still showed up every day and gave it his all when he was healthy and able to contribute. And, you know, he was in there quite a bit, like 2009. Was in there quite a bit, played a big role in everything, but some good years in the form.
I think that one too is again, we talk about baseball players outside of baseball. And I know in that last year, his dad was going through cancer and he was gone. He they'd take him out and he'd be gone for a little bit to go see him. And, you know, that's the Jim Tracy days, you know, in that 09 season. And so sometimes I think we look at those stats and forget that this is a human. Like, this guy knows what could be contributing to, you know, in his life, what's going on to this performance or how he looks at the plate, you know, getting replaced by EY Jr. Yeesh. You know, like, yikes. Or they went with Jason Nix as the starting second baseman ahead of him. Rockies, like, 2 weeks later were like, oh, never mind. That was a big mistake. Sorry. We forget sometimes, like, going through something like that, or when these, you know, we look at it, you know, when they have kids, hey, dad's not sleeping at night because he's helping out. Uh-huh. He has to show up to the ballpark early and play a game.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of things, and that's just kind of what reminded me looking through and studying, researching Farmers, and yeah, the unfortunate accident, breaking his collarbone and going through something like that. And we just look at the stories of him, the person.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like that, you know, once the Rockies traded him to Houston, he's granted free agency, and Clint Hurdle, Pittsburgh's like, this is a guy that I want in my clubhouse. Mm-hmm. So that says a lot. It's not just solely we need his stats. It's I need this guy to mentor and help my guys be in the clubhouse. And I think that's what was something really cool.
Yeah.
And then when you see these stories of players, veterans taking a new guy, the rookie under their wing, and teaching them how to play the right way. Another story that I saw was about Royce Clayton and Clint Barmas when he came up. Royce Clayton, a very seasoned veteran, and showed him how to do things, you know. And when Barmas goes to Pittsburgh, he did the same for Jordy Mercer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they took him in and helped him out, looked out for him. So that I think that's really cool that we can say about Clint Barmas. Throughout his whole career, he's one of those guys that people would, you know, they're attracted to him in the way that he presented himself, carried himself.
Yeah, and seeing here, like, research, now after those couple years in Pittsburgh, some good years in Pittsburgh around that time, and then when he comes back in 2015 as a member of the Padres, they played his walk-up music when he came up and he got a standing ovation from the fans. Like, he'd only been there 2 years and left a lasting impact there on those fans and, you know, left that impact on Rockies fans. Now, one of those clear fan favorites, you know, that sometimes can maybe fly under the radar, kind of get forgotten from those years, but a guy that everybody loved and whatnot. And I think the big one is because of the moment he delivered as a rookie in 2005, which I'm sure... Well, good time. Opening day at Coors Field when facing a Hall of Famer in Trevor Hoffman, game on the line, did something pretty special on opening day at Coors Field, didn't he?
Yes, but I was in Peru at the time, so I didn't get to experience that, but I remember hearing about it. Every time I'm like, oh, yeah, like I act like I was there, or like I saw it. It's just repeated replays.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, was that the one they, I can't, no, they didn't. I remember during the COVID year, and they're playing all their, like the inning-by-inning Rockies highlights moments. They had a lot to choose from an opening day, opening day inning for a walk-off. And I can't remember if they went with Bichette or Barmas.
Yeah, those are the two most iconic. Well, the Eric Young first one at Mile High. Mm-hmm. But then the ones at Coors. You know, Dante for me is the number one. But this one, Clint Barmas, because it was off Trevor Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
I think people forget how dominant Trevor Hoffman was. You know, when you heard his walkout song, was it Metallica or AC/DC? And it would start, it would start going, and people were like, "Oh, it's this thing's over." And so that's something. Opening day in Coors against Trevor Hoffman and the Padres, and he goes, "Yak job."
Yeah. So it was when it was, in fact, they did do. It was the bottom of the ninth highlight for that the pseudo opening day that they did online, and it is the full bottom of the ninth clip capped off by his thing. And dang YouTube with all its ads nowadays. But yeah, but having to rally against Trevor Hoffman, which we've had to do once or twice in their history, but had a little bit of a rally. Oh, look, there was Corey Sullivan with a full head of hair. And trying to see here. Yeah, they had a guy on first. So he was the first Rockies rookie to hit that home run. Like a walk-off home run, probably on opening day. All kinds of always weird stats. But I think the funny thing is, because it's from Clint Barmas, guy you probably didn't expect it to come from. And he's able to deliver kind of that memorable moment that I think on Twitter, that was the first thing people popped up, like, oh, opening day, 2005. Like, that's what always gets pointed back to. After Ryan McMahon hit his grand slam in the home opener, what clip was shown the next day? Oh, old Clint Barmas hitting a walk-off at Coors Field on opening day. So it's still writ. It's one of those moments that is just lived in perpetuity for the Rockies.
Oh yeah, and that was like the beginning. He was on fire that year. He was batting .410 at the end of April.
Mm-hmm.
Rookie of the month. He was only the third rookie to hit .400 in April.
Mm-hmm.
Ever of in that time. Holy cow, man. He was on, and everybody was like, holy cow, this is our dude.
Mm-hmm. And then they went riding on ATVs with Todd Helton and Brad Hopp, and then they had some dinner, and he liked the meat so much that Todd sent a package home with him, and then he tripped on the stairs and broke his collarbone. Dang.
So once again, that's one of those like, oh, the what if?
Yeah.
Like, gosh, dang. but he is forever in Rockies history, Rockies lore, with that home run on opening day.
Yeah, and what I like is, after he's done playing, after he retired, he began coaching high school here in Colorado, didn't he?
I think he was coaching high school at least. Up in Meade,
mm-hmm.
north of Denver. And I would guess so.
Yeah, because I remember watching the news, getting ready for school. We'd always watch watch Channel 2 News and whatever iteration of it at the time, WB or CW, whatever it was at the time. And they'd do the stories, and I think he was, I don't know if he still is or... Yeah, at one point he was coaching high school, just like you naturally do, coaching his boys or coaching his kids in baseball and the whatnot. But yeah, that's what he ended up doing after his playing career. So,
oh yeah,
natural guy.
In 2018, he was at Berthoud High School.
Mm-hmm.
Berthoud. Yeah, up there north. But then there's just other little things seeing here and there of people. It has official home of the Northside Dirt Devils. He's coaching some youth teams or yeah, that's so he's sticking around. I would like to see him more in and around the Rockies. I know they've had him back doing some things like the announcing of the draft and those kind of things, but I love seeing those former Rockies that are back at the events. They're back in the stadium, special assistants, helping out with the minor leagues and those kind of things. I think he'd do a great job.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's one of those. I think he's come back for like spring trainings too and like hung out for a little bit and stuff. And with Bill Schmidt at the helm, I'm sure he's always looking for more and more of that stuff. Bring guys back. But yeah, Clint Barmas, always a fan favorite. I always like Barmas, old Barmy, and everything. One of just those good dudes, good ball players that like you were always rooting for him. I think that was the big thing. Regardless of what he's doing, you still had that, even that little bit of hope in you, like, okay, this is it. He's going to do something good here. And then sometimes he does.
And I think that's it's because of that moment.
Yeah.
Moment that he had where he came in the clutch as a rookie in the walk-off opening day against Trevor Hoffman. And so you always thought of that. That's how I always felt because of that moment. This guy has that potential. He's done it once and he can do it again.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Always a good one. And he was an important member of every Rocky ever. And always got, he got a lot of good interactions there. Not a lot of comments, but a lot of good interactions. People just like, yeah, Barmas, I remember him. So just like those Pittsburgh fans, fan favorite here in Colorado. But
And what's cool is how he made a home here in Colorado, too.
yeah. It's like him and Corey Sullivan, they just like never left. And so I did see that when he first came up, the Rockies gave him a Kenny Chesney song as his walk-up that he kept for years and then changed it when he went to Pittsburgh. The Rockies just gave him a walk-up song.
Oh, I'm sorry, but that'd be I'd tell find me another one, please.
Please, I don't want this. Yeah. Kenny Chesney. Yeah. I don't know why would you give him that random one?
They're probably like Todd Helton was in charge of just
Yeah.
give him like a profile, like kind of like Tinder or whatever, and
Mm-hmm.
swipe there. He's like, give him this.
Give him this random country.
Okay.
Give him Kenny Chesney's Back Where I Come From as his walk-up song.
Gross.
Then he changed it to some Journey when he went to Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah,
Oh goodness.
I can dig that one.
But that'll do it here for this edition of Every Rocky Ever. As always, we appreciate everybody tuning in, giving support to our little program here, and putting up with a couple of brothers just talking about the Rockies and trying their darndest to dig into their memories.
25. Got to keep it on, keep it going.
Keep on a rolling here. But yeah. Until next time, you can find us over at Every Rocky Ever over on Twitter. Find me at Silent underscore Crowd. Find Dustin at Mr. T Spanish. Also, be sure to follow at Rocky Mountain Rooftop over on Twitter and Instagram, and our weekly show of Affected by Altitude, starring myself and Evan Lang. But until next time, I'm Skyler. That's Dustin. This has been Every Rocky Ever. Farewell.
Farewell.